This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snore Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Waylon McQueen.
We've got quite the show today.
It's September baseball.
September baseball.
Baby.
Coming down the home stretch.
Can you believe it? Has the season gone fast or slow or average for you?
I feel like the season has felt long to me, not
well,
over
your
long.
Fan is it's probably your how good your team is.
Yeah, my team is not good for sure, which is definitely part of it. Especially the first 2 months of the season, they were so bad,
yeah.
And it was just like every game, actually was 5 hours long because they used so many pitchers and whatnot. But I also just think we were sort of just talking right before we got on air that this season has felt like there are not a lot of peaks and valleys. Maybe it's felt like very steady in a way.
Yeah. I feel like this season has the most felt like we're just getting ready for the playoffs.
Yeah. It's weird.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like there haven't been as many like standout moments as last year. I don't know if this is all just like relative in my brain, but some of it is like there hasn't been an Indians winning streak. That was like the story of
or
baseball.
Or a Dodgers losing streak.
Yeah. There haven't been maybe breakthrough stories.
Stanton chasing 60 last year was going on.
Yeah.
This is a great trade deadline, which we talked about when that happened.
We'll be talking more about trades in this show.
Yeah.
Before we really get into things, let's do our shout out to Boardwalk Audio for their support for hosting this show. You can support Boardwalk and Ducksnort by visiting visiting ducksnortpodcast.com. Click the support our artist link. That'll take you to Amazon shop like you normally would. And Boardwalk and Ducksnort get a small percentage. And also, a shout-out to our distribution partners over at Off the Bench Baseball. They got an article. If you listened to last week's show, we were talking about the trade deadline MVPs, and one of the candidates is Kevin Gausman. Mm. And they have an article analyzing Gausman's success with the Braves. So what a tie-in. But he'll be an interesting guy to watch, I think, as sort of such a highly touted prospect, you know, has been middling, I guess you could say, in the majors. Not bad, but not great.
Right.
And now he's on a new team that maybe handles pitchers better. So check out that for sure. And actually, before we get in, so we're going to talk about the, I guess, waiver trade deadline. Is that what it would be called? August 31st? Non-waiver trade deadline is July 31st.
Yeah.
Before we talk about that, I want to let you know, or maybe you already know because it was huge news, that Sunday was Hawk Day at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Oh, my God.
You would have hated it so much. A day honoring Hawk Harrelson, which
I knew
he deserves. He deserves a day
for the
White Sox.
He 100% deserves
35 years in the booth.
He obviously deserves a day.
But he gave, like, So watching it, here was my experience. I'll give you like just sort of beat by beat. They showed a video tribute to him, and they had like all his old broadcast partners on the field and his family on the field and all this stuff. And it was like actually very nice. Like the video thing sort of moved me because it was all these highlights of, you know, being a White Sox fan that I remember very well. But then Hawk gave a speech. Which was about half an hour long. And like, this is pregame. They're like delaying the start of the game. Like, players on both teams are in the dugouts. And it was the most Hawk Harrelson speech you could imagine. It was just like long and rambling. He talked about like how he'll never forgive Don Fear for instigating the 1994 strike. This is in his like Hawk Day acceptance speech. He talked about how he hates sabermetrics, like all this crazy stuff.
Oh, Hawk.
Pretty wild, but then he gets very emotional at the end and like very heartfelt. And it was like the perfect distillation of him as like you cranky old asshole who also is like very, I don't know, like he's just raw, and that's, you love him or hate him, but like that's what he made his bones on, is like being this sort of like raw, like passionate dude. So he gives this speech, and then the broadcast starts, and AJ Pierzynski is doing the game with him.
Right.
It's just him and AJ. Steve Stone is not doing it. And AJ's actually a pretty good color guy. Like he does like Fox games and stuff.
Yeah.
But Hawk at some point starts shitting on LeBron James, which like, politically basically being like, you know, I wish he hadn't stuck his nose. They were talking about Michael Jordan, and then Hawk was like, the only guys I ever made an appointment to view are Michael Jordan and LeBron James. Not anymore with LeBron. He should have stayed out of politics, you know. And then thank God the inning ends, literally. he's starting to say that. And like White Sox fans are like, no, don't, Hawk. Don't. And then there's a foul ball hit into the booth, which you hardly ever see.
Yeah.
And AJ reaches in front of Hawk and saves him barehanded from getting hit in the face with a foul ball.
What
and he catches
day.
It.
Is this his final game or is it just Hawk Day?
It's not his final game, I think, will be against the Cubs at the end of the... Do they have more games, Cubs-White Sox? Or it'll be next year. I think his final game is going to be like a Cubs-White Sox game, but maybe it'll be like one game next year.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Unbelievable.
That was Hawk Day. It was a wild ride, and the White Sox won like 8-0 at least, so...
That's good. There's the thing I did see from that game was the dude who, I don't remember who did it, but hit a home run that was barely foul.
Oh yeah, Daniel Palka.
And then in the same at bat, hit it almost in the exact same spot, only it was fair.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah, same pitch too.
Yeah. Watching that highlight and then seeing other highlights, like, because I saw that, and then they were like, watch Hawk for Hawk Day. I was like, no chance. I'm not
like,
watching this. Yeah.
You like try to delete the app
from
your phone.
No, yeah, I no longer want to hear anything about this. But I think they cut to like their radio announcements because it was one of those must see, so you get the other ones, which I think is one of the best things that MLB does.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Is that you get to hear all the
announcers. Hear all the calls and like the Spanish calls.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, my God. And even you get to hear the sometimes when it's like a super huge or crazy thing, they'll have the other team, they'll have like five different calls. But people were making fun of Hawk for doing a premature put it on the board before he knew. Because, like, AJ Brzezinski was like, I don't know if that's fair. And then, of course, Hawk right away was like, put it on the board. And then they're like, it's under review, Hawk. That's too close. Like, it looked foul.
yeah. I definitely, it's time for him to step away. And I'm glad he is. But, like, I do have to say there's times that I will miss him. You know,
of course you will. He's part of, I mean, you grew up with him.
Yeah, I grew up with him. And like, he also is like, it's sad to say about my favorite team, but there are not too many things that are sort of like enduring White Soxian, if that makes any sense. Like,
I get it.
There's not that many things that the like White Sox are known for.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like that, I feel like Hawk is very, a lot of people hate him, but like he is. He in some ways is what keeps the White Sox from being the Padres.
If you're doing,
you know,
like word association with every team.
Yeah.
Well, back up there, because the Padres had the San Diego Chicken. And so
yeah. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like sort
no,
of.
I understand.
Or if not the Padres, whatever. Like there's
it's an icon associated with the White Sox, and you're losing that.
Right.
And I agree. I don't think no one under 40 would ever think of the San Diego Chicken if you thought of the Padres.
Yeah.
That was a joke. Yeah, it's like rare to come across one of those for any team.
Yeah, especially now.
You know
I mean? I feel like the age of broadcasters, are you talking about just icons in general or broadcast?
I think both. Like,
you know, I feel like they're now broadcasters, like, you know, they move around, and if you're a local broadcaster, maybe you're aspiring to become an ESPN or a Fox broadcast.
Yeah,
like there's places to go, and there's reasons for guys to move around that there weren't for, you know, your like Ernie Harwells or your Jack Bucks or your Vince Scullys or whatever it is, or your Hawk Harrelsons, you know. And so I feel like that is going to become an increasingly rare thing of like a broadcaster who's associated, even like, you know, Chip Carey is like, he's a carry, but like he, how many teams has he called games for? And like he did national, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think also it's like, even if you are embedded with a team, you have to either be, well, the only reason we all knew who Vince Scully was though is because he did national games. Like that's the other,
but
like,
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, you look at like the other guys that I just named, you know, it's like,
but they all did national games. They all have, I can think of calls from, like Jack Buck's most famous call isn't, or one of his most famous isn't, he, one of his most famous is the World Series in 91.
Right.
Like, or I, those are, they're legends, but also I think there are these guys. I mean, if you're with a team for 60 years and you're on TV, you're, and baseball fans are going to know who you are. Like, that's obvious. But, like, for example, Denny Matthews, who's the radio guy for the Royals, no one knows who he is, and he's been around with the Royals since the Royals started.
Yeah.
And he's a radio guy, which is a little different.
Yeah.
But I think there, I mean, there might be, I mean, I try to watch a lot of games, but, like, for all I know, or, like, Dave Newhouse, or the Mariners, he's not there anymore. I think he died. But, like, he was, like, a Mariners legend, but I barely knew who he was.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess that is the difference then between Hawk and between...
Well, I think Hawk was just so nuts that everyone knew
who
he was.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why.
Yeah, yeah. He is an outlier.
That's the point that I was trying to get to,
see,
is that, like, if, for you to stand out, if you're not going to do a national game, you have to be Hawk.
Yeah.
Or, like, equally, you have to stand out in the... Or Harry Carey.
Or, like, Bob Uecker.
Or Bob,
I mean,
yeah,
Bob,
yeah,
Uecker,
Bob
was
yeah.
a celebrity in it, in another way, but...
But I think you have to be so weird or so controversial.
Right. Yeah, I see what,
like,
you're
Jason
saying.
Like, Jason Benetti, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good, mm-hmm. but if unless he goes national, he'll probably never get, like, a national fan base.
He actually does national college football games.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like,
I know.
I think he's great. I think Lane Casper's great for the Cubs, but I don't think, like, everyone's going to know who Lane Casper
yeah,
is
unless
he branches out, which is definitely a lost thing because I think just people knew, but everyone would stay with everyone for so long.
So maybe it's counterintuitive that, and I know this is a long tangent off of the August 31st trade deadline. But, like, maybe it's actually counterintuitive then, and, like, local guys will become better known because of, like, MLB TV and stuff. It's like, I can see, you know, whoever, it, like, any regional game, basically, I can see their announcer
right.
where I wouldn't ever have heard them.
I think that
know?
Is definitely true, but also it's like, I mean, I've talked about, and I watch a lot of games and pay particular attention to the announcers, but I still can't name.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, part of it is just because you never hear their names unless you watch the beginning right. broadcast, or you happen to catch it when they do the one little.
Right.
You're here for on WGN. It's
right.
the fifth inning with Lane Casper and Jim Deshaies or whatever. But, like, yeah, it's
I feel
super
like
weird.
In my brain, every team's color or every team's play-by-play guy is Matt Vasgersian.
Dude, it's, I see what, I know, like, I get what you're saying. It's worse than that. It's, what? Having a good play-by-play guy is,
I don't mean that Matt Vasgersian, like, even sucks. I mean, like,
no,
just,
I think he's good.
Just in my head, I'm like,
that's what they sound like.
That's their name.
Oh, that's
like,
their name.
I don't
oh,
know.
I see.
Like,
yeah.
If you asked me to guess who, like, the Rangers play-by-play guy is, I would say Matt Vasgersian, because I would know, like, one of the times I was right about
is
it.
Is he? I don't think he's the ESPN's guy now.
Is he? He yeah, was it's, Diamondbacks for a while, I think. That's where...
Is he? Was he?
I don't know.
The maybe, ESPN yeah, booth is Vasgersian, Jessica Mendoza.
On Sundays?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realize
and he's
that.
Going
I knew
downhill
it was A-Rod
he's getting
and
sucked into the
Vanessa.
Vortex of fucking A-Rod and
oh,
Mendoza's...
Man. You've turned
okay.
you've turned a 180 on A-Rod as a broadcaster.
I've never liked him as a broadcaster. As a studio
no,
analyst, as a
oh,
studio
okay,
analyst,
okay,
he's
okay,
good.
Okay.
And I love him as a baseball player. Never will stop.
Right.
I've never liked him as a broadcaster.
Okay.
He's not good at all.
He's all right.
He's not good.
He spouts a lot of, like, sort of nonsense, but also he makes points that I've never heard color guys make.
I mean,
before.
He has he's good in the sense because he has recently been in a major league clubhouse.
Yeah.
So he can, you're right about that. But he does a lot of repeating.
Sure.
What Jessica Mendoza says.
Yeah, Jessica Mendoza is actually really great.
I think they're all making each other worse.
Yeah.
Because I
liked her a lot better with Aaron Boone and Dan Shulman.
I did
last
too.
Year.
Yeah, and I thought Viscurgeon, when he was on MLB Network, was one of my favorite announcers, and now I don't like. I think they all are making it. It's not a good team.
Interesting.
I think they all need to be doing something
It'll
else.
It'll be interesting to see if they.
ESPN barely cares about baseball. I have no idea what they'll do. Steve Berthume does. Former SportsCenter anchor Steve Berthume does Diamondbacks.
Oh, that's Steve right. That's right.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. Viscurgeon must have been on a team.
He may have. I don't know. Okay. But maybe that's... Can you see how I would get those names confused, though?
Steve Berthume and Matt Viscurgeon.
Yeah. They're like...
They kind of sound similar, too.
Weird, like, plain white guy first name, like, weird.
Yeah. I like Berthume. I think he's divisive, but I like... I'm pro Berthume.
Oh, he was a Brewers and Padres play-by-play guy.
Oh, Viscurgeon was?
Yeah. So I'm talking out my old buttocks. All right. Well, let's move
on. Let's get to the trade deadline.
Let's talk trades. So a few days ago now, there were a number of big trades. I guess we could just run down sort of the biggest ones. Josh Donaldson to the Indians.
And then he immediately goes on the DL.
Well, he was already on the DL.
Oh, he was. I thought he got put on it.
No, he was already on the DL. They had to activate him to trade him because you can't trade a player on the DL.
Oh, I didn't know
And then
that.
They put him I back see. On the DL so that he could do a rehab assignment.
Oh, I learned something. I didn't know that.
Learn you good. Andrew McCutchen to the Yankees.
Sure.
Gio Gonzalez and Curtis Granderson to the Brewers.
Sure.
Ryan Madsen and David Freese to the Dodgers. Those are sort of the biggest players who moved. And, you know... I guess Donaldson and McCutchen are the biggest names. Mm-hmm. I guess Donaldson, I would say, is a bigger name at this point. He is less removed from his superstar prime than McCutchen is, even though he's older than McCutchen. Do you know McCutchen's only like 31?
Really?
Yeah. Doesn't it feel like he's 34 or something?
Yeah, maybe that's just because he played for the Giants. Like, play for the Giants automatically ages you in my mind by
That's
4
true.
Years.
Well, it's also like he's been on like a bit of a down. Like 2 years ago was like he was 29 and he had that pretty terrible year.
And then like stopped being good defensively, or like I don't think he was ever like fantastic, but stopped having like almost any value in center.
Yeah, like
or had negative value
very
in
big.
Center.
2016. He was worth 2.4 OR and negative 2.6 DWAR for negative 0.5 wins above replacement on the season. So, yeah, that was 2 years ago, his age 29 season. Last year, he had a bounce back. He was pretty decent for the Giants.
I mean, I think he's settling into being like I think it's a good move for the Yankees, and then he's just going to be a bench player.
Well, I don't know if he is.
When Judge comes back?
Yeah, I would think that he would play over Brett Gardner, who is not having a great year, maybe. But maybe it's a rotation, you know what I mean? Where also he's a better defender than Stanton or Judge, so
yeah.
Even in his, I guess, not peak form. But
it's a good piece to add.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees are really good at that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're really good. I mean, part of it is because they have a lot of money, so they can just add players, although I think they were trying to wriggle to stay under the luxury tax, mm-hmm. even with this addition, and I think, frustratingly, they did it. They're just really... They fill in those blanks, you know, and the guys they get usually do it pretty well, like Neil Walker or like Todd
That's
Frazier
the thing, like,
last year. They just like... They plug and play veterans I don't know if it's just they put them in spots to succeed or they just have the best coaches, best training staff, best medical staff. Like, but they're really good at that. So I can see, you know, it's frustrating, but I can definitely see Andrew McCutchen hitting a game-winning homer in the ALCS.
My first thought when they got him, I was like, oh, cool. So we'll see from McCutchen from 3 years ago now.
Right.
At least for like 2 months. Like,
yeah.
It's so weird how that happens. I don't know. I'm happy for him. I like him.
I feel like the thing with August trades especially is like you don't really give up all that much usually.
No.
So if you're a playoff team, like it kind of can't help but be a win. And for the Indians, getting Donaldson is like a pretty insane addition in terms of upside, right? Like if he gets healthy, and is even 80% of the player that he's been over the last few years, like, that is a potentially series changing.
Will he DH?
I believe he'll go to third. Jose Ramirez will go to second. Jason Kipnis will go to center because they've been sort of cycling through center fielders. And
who DHs for them now?
That's a great question.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that much. But
Edwin Encarnacion.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, so yeah, then he'll have to play third. I think to your point, it's exactly what you were saying, but to me, the thing about it is, like, it's a high upset. So basically, it's not Donaldson being on the Indians will not hurt them. Like, the worst case scenario is that he doesn't play well, he has a bad ALDS, and he just doesn't make the ALCS roster. Like, that's
even
like
that,
the worst,
like,
case scenario. And it doesn't, but that doesn't matter because their team's still stacked.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is worst case scenario, but, like, I would say, even like median outcome or like below median is like he hits as well as he's hit earlier this season. I guess worst case scenario is he's hurt, right? And like he doesn't really play.
Yeah.
Like sort of even not good scenario, but still good scenario is like he hits like he was hitting earlier this year, which is slightly above average. And he improves the Indians' depth because he's hitting better than whoever they were playing in center field,
right,
who he's essentially replacing in the lineup.
Well, the luxury that they have about being able to do that chain of what you just
move
said.
Kipnis.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the like best case scenario is like they've added one of the 10 best players in baseball to their roster for almost nothing.
Yeah.
And like, I think the problem with Cleveland, if there is a problem, is you know, they have this huge high-end talent, obviously, which we've talked about in previous episodes this season, of Lindor and Ramirez and Kluber and Carrasco and Bauer, but they don't have maybe as many complementary pieces as a team like the Red Sox does, right?
Yeah, this adds,
and like this just moving everybody down the pecking order,
yeah,
in like terms of importance, like all those sort of like you know, Lonnie Chisenhall type guys or whatever, or even like Yan Gomes type guys,
right,
is like so much more room for error than they had in a league where they might have to face the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Astros.
Exactly. Yeah.
Huge addition.
I think it's equivalent. It's not even equivalent. It's no, never mind.
I mean, it,
you're never going to hear what I was going to say.
Really? Well, can I guess what you were going to say, which is that it's similar to adding Verlander last year for the Astros?
No, I don't think it's, I was going to,
I don't think it's that big.
I was going to say Hamels, but I think it's between Hamels and Verlander.
Yeah.
Cause I think Hamels is the same thing. It's like it bumps, you don't have to rely on Mike Montgomery. Well, now you do cause Darvin, but like Hamels was the same thing. What he can do is so good, which it has proven to be.
Yeah.
But I think that Donaldson's upside is higher than
Much
Hamels'
higher,
upside.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite like Verlander, because the one thing is because Verlander was good on the Tigers and actively playing and playing well when that trade happened. So like right away you were like, oh shit, like they just added an ace.
Right.
And the doubt was, can he keep it up? Donaldson has to kind of get back in. We're saying if with Donaldson a little more.
Yeah.
Like, is the only difference, really.
That's fair. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I guess maybe I've always liked Josh Donaldson a lot. He's been such a consistent player over the last 5 years that it seems like, it really is injuries this year.
I thought he had a down year last year, or was he hurt? Was it just injuries last year?
He was hurt
for
like maybe a quarter of the season.
Okay, it was just probably that then.
Yeah. But statistically, you know, he was worth almost 5 wins still. So I really do think it's injuries, and I think that, you know, that's a knock on wood kind of a thing, but like what a gamble well worth taking for Cleveland. And the kind of move that Cleveland wouldn't make in any other scenario, because he would cost too much, or you, like, either in terms of prospects or in terms of money.
I think it's a good move. I think what's frustrating about it is, like, I still feel like they're my fourth favorite team in the AL.
In terms of like how much you like them,
well,
or
favorite
how
if,
good
like,
they're going to be.
If I'm setting odds as far as who I think is going to be Like, I still would take the Astros, Red Sox, and Yankees over them, which is just more.
I feel like the Yankees have been shaky lately.
They have been, but if they get Judge back and now they have McCutchen, McCutchen's not as huge as Donaldson, obviously, but getting Judge back is. And Gary Sanchez is back.
Well, but
now
they lost Chapman maybe for this season.
Yeah, and they do not have starting pitching.
Yeah, so that sort of like.
So, yeah, maybe I
that's
do like
kind
the,
of like
yeah.
the opposite
yeah.
of the Donaldson result, which is like moving all these guys down on the totem pole.
Moved,
is like losing Chapman moves everybody on their pitching staff, like basically up on the totem
you're
pole.
Right.
And there's some guys that are struggling, you know.
Yeah, I guess in a series, if it was an actual, like one game, maybe it would be a crapshoot between the Indians and Yankees. But if it's a series, like just because if you're throwing, I mean, Kluber, Bauer, Carrasco, like who are the Yankees matching up against that?
Right. And even like Clevinger is probably better than any starter.
Yeah.
Like, I guess Severino, but Severino has been so up and down
so
lately.
Shaky. It's just like, it's just your. I mean, it feels like Hap's been their best pitcher lately.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, we talked about
yeah,
this
we talked about
last
week.
Week,
but like. Yeah. The Yankees are just their strategy is going to be you have to outslug anybody.
Yeah.
Unless they're playing the A's, in which case the A's don't have any super great pitchers either.
Yeah. Trevor Cahill, the return.
Like I said.
let's talk about the Brewers really quick.
I don't know what they do. They have a million outfielders and they get Curtis Granderson.
They do. They have
Gio Gonzalez
so
is good,
many hitters.
I guess.
Yeah, Gio Gonzalez feels like the move they needed to make at the trade deadline. They got him a month later, but they've lost a lot of ground. They're still in first place on the wild card right now.
Yeah, because they just passed the I think, yeah.
Yeah,
back,
they did.
Yeah.
But
they're playing the Cubs right now, so there's no chance they'll win that game. So,
except for that one they walked off yesterday.
Ugh. C-Shack. So, sorry. I derailed you.
No. It's fine. Like, my thing with the Brewers, I guess, is like the same thing that they with my, that my felt about them around the July 31st deadline.
When they got too many,
which is like you're doing a lot here, and like I can see how each thing that you're doing maybe incrementally increases the likelihood of your success, but like I don't see anything here that is like dramatically or either doesn't have the upside of something like the Donaldson trade and doesn't have the certainty of improving your team as something like the Manny Machado trade.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's It feels like they're... I hesitate to call them like moves around the margins because they're getting like a lot of big name players and like some potentially very good players like Jonathan Schoop. You know, or Gio Gonzalez. It's like potentially very good players, but I don't know that you can like say either like, well, this, you know, has a lot of variability, but like if it goes well, it turns us into a World Series winner.
No.
Or like this doesn't have much variability, but it makes us division or wild card favorites. They're sort of like have landed in the middle on every trade that they've made.
I think Gonzalez makes the most sense because everyone knows they need starting pitching.
But Gonzalez hasn't even been good this year.
Yeah,
he's been fine.
I feel like it's a similar move to like J.A. Happ or Cole Hamels, where he could like Cole Hamels was not pitching well. I mean,
but
I know
the Brewers have a bunch of guys as good as J.A. Happ or Gio Gonzalez or Cole Hamels have been this year, just without the name recognition or track
but
record.
But that's what I'm saying. Like Gio Gonzalez could the Brewers Gio Gonzalez could go on a Gio Gonzalez like tear at the right time that none of they can't be as but I think it's just like you're saying with the Donaldson, like Gio Gonzalez, it's not the impact that Gio Gonzalez have isn't equivalent to how good Josh Donaldson is, obviously. But what are they going to lose if Gio Gonzalez is just an average pitcher?
Yeah, that's very true.
Like
the upside
of Gonzalez for practically, I think that they must have given up nothing is like, why not take a risk that maybe Gio Gonzalez is? I mean, if Gio Gonzalez has like three good starts and then you feel pretty good about him throwing against St. Louis in the wild card game, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you got him for.
You're not wrong. I guess like the difference to me is that Josh Donaldson has been an MVP caliber player for like the last 3 years when healthy.
Yeah.
And Gio Gonzalez has been healthy, but like he had a. a nice year last year, but I think especially going by the like underlying numbers as the last 3 years, he's more like a 3 or a 4 starter.
Yeah, then, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't, otherwise it just seems like they're stockpiling.
Yeah.
Because like, Granders, like, all of them in a vacuum, you're like.
It definitely doesn't hurt the talent level of your team, but also.
I don't know, like, what's Curtis Granderson going to do?
Yeah, maybe have a good at bat off the bench or whatever. You know, pinch hitter, if but they like, make the World Series, he's a DH or something. But. Yeah, they already have a bunch of guys.
That's just like
do that.
I don't think Curtis Granderson is going to do. Isn't capable of doing anything more than anybody else on the team.
Right. He's a veteran guy, I guess. So I can see, especially for September, like maybe he doesn't even make the playoff roster. But
or
for September, he's another guy.
What? Maybe I don't like. But
there does also come a point where, like, sort of like, you know, they've added probably like. 5 or 6 high profile guys. They also added a reliever. They traded for Xavier Cedeño from the White Sox.
Yeah.
So they've added probably like 7 guys since July 25th or whatever to their 25 man roster. And like, not that I think that chemistry is a be all end all factor or anything, but like at a certain point, you start to wonder like, so they're going into like September with like, a quarter of their team or a third of their team is like strangers. Like that doesn't seem ideal.
It really feels like, I don't know if it's like desperate, but it just feels like we're just like, we're going to do anything we can. I mean, I don't know. Part of me gets it, I guess, when you're looking ahead of you at the Cubs who just won the World Series with the basically the same team. 2 years ago, and then you're looking behind you at the Cardinals who always do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and
yeah,
you're,
you want to do whatever you can.
And you want to do whatever you can to, like, prove that you... But it just seems like... Because, like, when... It just seems, like, too much.
I will say Christian Yelich has been on fire.
He's been so good, which
like,
is great.
He may be playing his way into the MVP.
Yeah.
And but, so that gives you a lot of breathing room if suddenly, you know, Christian Yelich is an MVP winner or candidate.
But, I mean, Christian Yelich is like an exception to what we're saying because no one was like, what are they doing when they signed Christian Yelich?
Yeah.
Or Lorenzo
Cain,
who's played really
big,
well for
that
them.
That was like, the big swing. I think there was a couple, what are you doings with Cain? Because they signed him right after Yelich and everybody was already like, well, they have 4 outfielders and they just signed a 5th one. But
it's turned out that...
Yeah, and those were clear upgrades, I guess, which, like, I don't know. Again,
if you're talking
I don't
clubhouse,
know
if, Kane, you yeah, want yeah. your clubhouse. I mean, I know that's, like, a peripheral, but, right. I mean, just team chemistry, I think someone like Kane. Maybe Granderson's like that. Seems
he,
like people
he does
like
have
Granderson.
The reputation of that, actually.
So maybe it is just, like, we have Kane and Granderson in the clubhouse and whoever else is good on that team to say, like, to, and Granderson's been there with a million different ways, like, every way possible. So maybe it's just having that. Gio Gonzalez the same way. Maybe it's just they're thinking like, I want a pitcher who's pitched in a playoff race.
Yeah,
I'm not saying
that's true.
Necessarily.
I want a pitcher
a
who's
sense.
Lost in the division
I mean,
series.
I know, but
for
like
5
but
years in a row.
It's you people. I still think as analytical as they're getting, I still think there's like a little bit of like, I want someone who's been there.
Yeah.
I think it happened with Cole Hamels and the like.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either. You need veteran leadership sometimes. I think it's worth paying a premium for every once in a while. So
if they're the type of person that can walk up, like if, you know, if Granderson's the type of person that can walk up to Travis Shaw and be like, calm the fuck down or like what, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah,
I don't
fuck Travis Shaw. I get
I was
what
just trying
saying.
To think of someone I knew who hasn't been there before on the,
if Granderson's the kind of guy who can walk up to Josh Hader and be like, stop tweeting the N word, man. What's your fucking problem?
Go back in time and stop being such a dick kid.
Well, let's move on because we're going to have a bit of a tighter episode than usual, and we're closing in on the end at least. I'll just say Dodgers adding David Freese and Ryan Madsen. Meh, whatever.
Yeah.
Similar to the Brewers, except like Dodgers are maybe a little bit more desperate because they're not quite as good as the Brewers in the standings right now, but... Or maybe they're not because they also have a chance, better chance of the division.
I think it's, I mean, I guess they're probably, Dodgers are in more of a dogfight.
Yeah.
Because there's,
right.
Because the gap is smaller, I feel like.
And they're also Yeah, I guess I agree. Yeah. I have
also,
nothing to
I'm
going
to tell you one thing. I'm over the Dodgers, man.
Well, topic for another time, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, my Met is just because fine, whatever.
Yeah, right.
I get it. You're the Dodgers.
But what I really want to take a sec to talk about is September call-ups. Bit of controversy, shall we say, over the weekend. We'll just run it down real quick. So, as I've ranted about before, there are teams manipulating service time. And the biggest news over the weekend in that regard is the White Sox announced they're not calling up Eloy Jimenez, which I've talked about on this show before and is very, very frustrating to me. Rick Hahn, general manager, said that it was because Jimenez needs to improve his defense. That's the reason they're not calling him up, which is ridiculous, especially if you've watched any White Sox games and you know the level of defenders they're currently starting in
also,
the corner outfield.
What better way to improve your defense than playing the majors when
right.
the stakes are zero?
Yeah, right. So instead of practicing his defense in the majors, he won't be playing for the next month, which definitely is makes it easy to work on things. So that is dumb enough in and of itself because it's clearly, in the most generous interpretation, I think you could say that they're being overly cautious. If you're saying that is,
that's
right.
Generous.
If you take them at their word that they're worried about his defense, that's overly cautious.
That's Gio Gonzalez. That's Gio Gonzalez optimistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
And of course, if you're not being generous, you can clearly see that they don't want to call him up to get an extra year of control. Meanwhile, the Twins have basically Thad Levine, the Twins general manager, basically admitted that they're not recalling Byron Buxton, who has been sort of rehabbing slash trying to get better, I guess, in AAA and has been, you know, he had a terrible year the first couple months. He has been hurt for most of the year. He was in AAA trying to get back, ended the last few weeks hitting pretty well, and the Twins announced they're not calling him up for the rest of the season. And then it's not a coincidence that the Twins, because the Twins have admitted that service time was one of the factors.
Right.
If Buxton gets like another 13 days or something of service time this year, mm-hmm. They'll lose a year of control, I guess, is one way to put it. Or if he doesn't get those days, they'll gain an extra year of control.
Right.
So Thad Levine has been taking some well-deserved heat, I think, for admitting that. I mean, part of me admires him for being transparent, and part of me thinks that's bullshit, and it's very, very frustrating.
It's
bullshit. It is bullshit. All of me thinks it's bullshit. Yeah. And it is very frustrating to me to see fans on Twitter take the side of the owners, say that, you know, they're just playing by the rules, even though it's not a good faith interpretation of the rules. It's a loophole and it's exploitative and it's not good for fans who want to see good baseball players. It's not good for teams that want to build relationships with baseball players. And it's obviously not good for the baseball players. They're having their wages artificially suppressed and they're losing experience and they're losing years of their life.
I mean, we've talked about this before, and I agree with all of, But I feel like I think it's unfair that he's taking more shit than Rick Hahn, or maybe he's not, but just because he's the one that has the balls to say, this is why I'm doing it.
Right.
Like, everyone's doing it. That's not a good excuse. So this is a situation where, like, the system's broken, and I don't think anybody should be doing it, which we've talked about. But if you're going to do it and if you're going to say this is why I'm doing it, that person to me deserves the least heat.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like what's frustrating to me is that like I'm not taking his side, but I'm taking it like at least he's telling us that he's being a piece of shit.
Right.
Like I already knew he was going to, like, if he would have not said it, I still would have been like,
he's sort of cutting through the bullshit, this like elaborate dance of like, well, you know, we feel like it would be best for him to, he's had a tough year or whatever.
Like if I'm a Twins fan, I'd be like, okay, this sucks, but at least you're telling me that, like, at least being upfront about how much you suck.
Yeah, like, I'm with you on that. I mean, either way, I don't think it makes much of a difference because it is pretty transparent either way when teams are manipulating service time, especially in light of, so the Padres called up Francisco Mejia, who's one of the 20 best prospects in baseball. The Nationals just called up Victor Robles, who's one of the 5 best prospects in baseball. You see teams that aren't doing it and are...
But do September call-ups hurt service time?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you see teams that are not doing it, and it makes me... Honestly, it makes me lose faith in the front office that they have a cohesive plan for what they're doing, because in one sense, the front office is saying we're planning ahead and we're, you know, making sure that we have these players for as long as we can or whatever. But in another sense, it doesn't show much faith in themselves that they're going to be able to retain these players.
Oh,
it doesn't
yeah.
show that they actually are focused on player development as much as they are on payroll manipulation.
I mean, I think this situation is especially striking just because, like you said with Jimenez or Buxton, they're not playing baseball.
Right.
Like you could do some gymnastics to be like, well, AAA is not the majors. Everyone knows that. But at least they're playing baseball. At least they're seeing whatever they're working. At least they're seeing breaking balls that are almost major league level. At least they're playing in stadiums. If you're working on your defense, you're getting defensive plays that
reps,
are going to mimic.
Right.
Like, no matter what you say, no matter what drills Eloy Jimenez is doing, it's not the same as being in a game.
Right, and it's also, you know, the White Sox just called up a reliever from AA because they have to add him to the 40-man roster this offseason. So
yeah.
They're like, let's give him a whirl and see how he does in the majors. And it's like, so you're admitting that you could take an imperfect player and put them in the majors. You just don't want to do it with the good imperfect player.
It's very stupid, and I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I just don't think that the Twins guy is more of a, what's his name, Levine?
Yeah, yeah.
He's more of a villain than anyone else.
No,
has done it.
You're right. You're right.
Like, because he admitted it.
And it's interesting that he's taking heat for it because now nobody else is going to admit it. So the other thing that happened is that the Players Association just hired a new chief negotiator. So the collective bargaining agreement expires after 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The MLBPA just added this negotiator. Obviously, last offseason, there
one.
Was
like a
well-regarded
name,
but
he's one. He's a good one.
Last offseason, there was a lot of talk about slow free agency and how that might cause labor problems. This season, I think you're seeing a lot more about minor league player pay. They're not part of the Players Association, but that has been a bigger talking point. And now this sort of like, more teams are manipulating service time and more players are getting affected by it. Basically, what I'm getting at is I think there's going to be a strike.
There's going to be a strike. But, man, if we can get rid of this stupid... I don't know. I don't want a season to be canceled, but if we lose games to get a better deal from the players, if that happens...
Right.
Then I don't know. I don't know how against it I am.
Yeah, same. I think especially, you know, I'm just sort of pro-union and pro-labor in general, and especially coming off of Labor Day, you reflect on all the labor fights that have been won, that have been very important to many people. It's not exactly the same stakes when you're talking about the Baseball Players Association. It is exactly the same stakes when you're talking about minor league players and them not having a living wage.
I mean, that's like a whole separate...
Which, is a separate thing, but again, it is frustrating to me to see fans take the side of owners and root for wage suppression. And, like, I do want all that to change. I am so worried that whatever the outcome of this new CBA is going to be another 1994 all over again for the White Sox, where they lose the heart of this contention window they've set up.
Yeah.
And, like, that is the most frustrating thing of all about the Jimenez situation to me, is they're doing this sort of manipulation and they don't know what the rules are going to be in 2025.
I think that's true. That's a good point. I think though that I think the hockey strike is still fresh enough on people's minds. And then the NBA strike that didn't cost games.
Yeah. Lockout.
Or whatever. The work stoppage. I think that they'll get a deal done before we lose any significant part of the season. I do think I think there is going to be a stoppage.
I don't know, man. I feel like there are foundational cracks showing in a way that there haven't since 1994.
I agree with you, but like, I also think the stakes of losing revenue
for the owners.
Yeah,
that's
true.
I mean,
I think they can afford to lose some games, but man, you can't afford to lose a season. Like, look at the hit the NHL took. It's really kind of only in the last like 3 or 4 seasons even getting back to close to what it was or where it was.
But
I don't think baseball would take that big of a fall.
Yeah, but it always comes back to that owners are more equipped to deal with a work stoppage than
players.
Yeah. There's 30 owners. They're all billionaires.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of players.
I get it.
Some of them, you know, are barely even on major league rosters, and they're making, you know, less than $100,000 a year on their veterans, 40-man, whatever salary.
Right.
They pay part of that to their agents. They pay, you know, it's like.
I get it.
But
they also now have like a master negotiator on their side.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Well, I mean.
Well, yeah, but like, I mean.
Not that he'll necessarily win,
right.
But he's better than Tony Clark by a million.
Correct. Yeah.
Whatever measurement you want to use.
A million Jose Altuve's.
Yeah, Altuve's. He's a million Altuve's better than Tony Clark.
Ahead of Clark. I
think people are taking the side of the owners. What they really want is a salary cap. That, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, because they also don't want players to be making, like, there's no real difference between making $45 million and $30 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying I necessarily agree. Because what people look at is like, these players make too much money anyway. Why are they demanding so much? Which I get. Salary caps make the owners more money too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So
I mean, that's
like
a fundamental misunderstanding of like the economics of baseball, where it's like somebody's making that extra $15 million. It's just whether you want that to be Mike Trout or Artie Moreno.
But like, you need a redistribution of that to the mind. Like, that's the best case scenario.
Yes.
Is like people, I think what, without thinking about it, I think probably what people are thinking about is they don't want players to make out of control money. Because that's why you only 7 teams can have superstars,
right,
or whatever. But you also want you want your rookies making more.
You want more revenue
or more
sharing.
Money quicker.
Yeah, you want more revenue sharing so that teams can keep their players.
You want the minor leaguers to be able to afford to have an apartment.
Right.
Like,
well, I don't know actually if most people care about that. I certainly do. But like, I think
they would if they.
Yeah,
I honestly think that's an ignorance. I think a lot of people just don't realize how bad it is in the minors.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, I don't know. It's becoming very apparent that the big money is being spent on the not best years of players.
Yeah, you want because it sucks also when like your favorite player gets a $150 million contract and then like they're this millstone for the last 5 years of your career and you're like, well, fuck, like I used to love Albert Pujols and now like the only way context I can think about him in is that he's a terrible player who's making $30 million a year.
And I think they're just that. I think what people want to be so Albert Pujols, instead of making $200,000 a year in his third straight 7-war year,
right,
he's making $5 million that year or whatever. That's not a lot, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, no.
So like the money isn't going to Artie Moreno or whoever. Like, I'm switching team because he's in the Cardinals, but it isn't going to owners. It's just it's flattening out, so it's not like a spike.
Yeah. Well, there's no easy answers to it.
Well, I obviously just fixed it. So,
except for Waylon's answer, there's no easy answers to it. But like, look, we've already talked it over with Tony Clark and with Rob Manfred, and they don't want our solutions.
Yeah, I'm tired of it. They don't have. Here's what I think about Tony Clark. He does not have the guts to come on this podcast.
I think you're right. He's a fucking coward.
He doesn't have the guts at all to come on this podcast.
You hear me, bro? Hey, door's always open, Tony. You have my number.
Name the place and time.
We'll
and we
be
talk.
There. Well, yeah, we'll be talking about this for years to come, probably. But in the meantime, that's all the time we have for today. So join us again next week. I think we'll be resuming our favorite, least favorite players series, which we've been having a lot of fun with. We'll talk about all the baseball news as we're closing in on the playoffs.
It's coming up.
Thanks again to Off the Bench and Boardwalk. Check those guys out. Hit us up on Twitter at DuckStormPod. Let us know what you're thinking about the labor situation, about the September trades, about broadcasters, all that good stuff. Leave reviews in the iTunes store. Subscribe if you just found the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you later. Adios.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit BoardWalkAudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.